From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, well, a night of science with Professor James McKinney. He'll be joining us to discuss captured comets, weather manipulation, and the secret behind prime numbers. Hey, be wary, by the way, if you get some kind of email from a company looking to sign you up for a doomsday newsletter. They say it's imminent, but they want a 5-year subscription out of you. So I would pass on that. Well, Saturday night into Sunday morning, actually 2 a.m. on Sunday, it's time to turn the clock ahead 1 hour. Daylight saving time starts earlier. The time is springing forward this weekend, much earlier than normal, and that could cause some computer and gadget headaches, they say. So if you need some information, start doing some searches on your computer engine searches and get the information you need for your computer. The warnings surround this year's daylight savings times, the time change. You know, it's not quite like the Y2K scare, but some things could happen. The earlier daylight savings time, which was implemented by Congress as a way to conserve energy, will throw a few computers and smart gadgets for a loop because they're automatically programmed to change the time on the old date, which is April 1st. Almost any computer or operating system that was programmed before 2005 won't be ready to handle that change. That means most calendar software like Outlook 2003 and computer systems like Windows XP and Apple's OS X will need to have the new time programmed in. The clocks, by the way, on your microwave, digital camera, camcorder, and personal digital assistant, or PDAs, may also need fixing as well. So just do some searches, figure out what you need to do. But don't forget to turn the clock ahead 1 hour when you go to bed Saturday night. Armed with fresh intelligence, the CIA is moving additional men, power, and equipment into Pakistan in an effort to find Osama bin Laden almost 6 years later. And they're also looking for his deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Reports that the trail has gone stone cold are not correct, said one U.S. official. People familiar with the CIA operation say undercover officers with paramilitary training have been ordered into Pakistan and the area across the border with Afghanistan as part of the ramp-up. An American biodefense analyst living in Europe says that if the U.S. invades Iran to halt its nuclear ambitions, Syria is ready to respond with weapons of mass destruction, specifically biological weapons. This story breaking on WorldNet Daily by who? Jerry Corsi, our regular guest on Coast to Coast. Jerry, this is serious business, isn't it?
It is, George, and it's a great honor to be back with you. This report comes from Jill Bellamy Decker, and she currently works in Europe with the Public Health Preparedness Program for the European Homeland Security Association under the French High Committee for Civil Defense. So she's a senior officer, and our counterpart, as it were, to the Homeland Security Department. And Jill Decker has studied the Syrian bioweapons program and says that it's deeply embedded within their commercial pharmaceuticals business and their veterinary vaccine research facility.
That's where they're hiding this?
That's where they're hiding it. And it's particularly difficult then because the normal commercial work or the veterinary vaccine research would mask a bioweapons program. And Jill Decker is reporting that they've especially made advances in smallpox-related viruses. And that's a very frightening revelation because Jill is saying that they've developed very virulent strains, which would have an infectivity of 1 to 13. In other words, if they can infect one person with a smallpox virus, 13 other people could be expected to catch it, where the normal strains are usually 1 to 3 infectivity ratio.
Now, Jerry, this isn't the old mumbo-jumbo that led us into the war in Iraq, right? Where, you know, the president said they have weapons of mass destruction, and Colin Powell said that. This is serious.
It's serious, and, George, I continue to say we should not have a war with Iran, and we should not go to war with Syria. What these bioweapons programs points out, though, is that there will be very serious consequences if President Bush does decide to go to war, And I've been hoping and praying and working so that that does not happen. I don't think a war is a solution here.
Well, if for some reason Iran is attacked and Syria does launch some kind of biological attack against Israel or Europe, as Jill Bellamy Decker is claiming, all hell will break loose, Jerry.
Well, that's right, George, especially since Jill Decker is reporting that they've now developed the ability to deliver these smallpox weapons through an aerosol capability. So even a small team of operatives could, for instance, have an airport attack or an attack on an airplane where the people would be infected, say, going to Europe or going to Israel, and they wouldn't be sick immediately, but when the smallpox caught, just their breathing would pass the infection to another 13 people.
Is she saying anything about the possibility of a biological attack here in the United States if Iran is hit?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. Her main concern is Europe and Israel. I think she feels that the Syrian operatives could more easily penetrate a European airport or even get into Israel. But to come to the United States, I think she feels is a little bit more difficult at this point. But George, if it got into Europe with this kind of an infection delivered by aerosol, it could easily spread to a worldwide outbreak of smallpox within a short period of time.
All right, who's to say, Jerry, if Iran is not attacked, if Syria won't give this to terrorists, and they still go ahead and do this?
Well, that's another point. Jill Decker's on her way to give an international paper on this. We got an advanced report, and what she's going to tell the intelligence summit in St. Petersburg this week is that Hezbollah is working very closely, as we know, with Syria, and there is the possibility that the smallpox biological virus could be given to terrorists from Hezbollah to carry and deliver a biological attack.
So it sounds like a catch-22 here.
Well, it does, George, except that I think that the way it's been presented and the way Syria is posturing, it's saying that this is the kind of consequence that if Ahmadinejad has been saying, if we're attacked, there'll be dire world consequences.
Yes.
I don't think that there's an intent by Syria at this point to launch an offensive bioterror attack. They're holding it as saying, if Iran is attacked and we have an alliance with Iran, this will have to be our response. That's how Syria right now is positioning the bio threat.
We can get the full story on WorldNet Daily. Jerry, thanks again for updating us on these stories.
Always an honor, George. Thank you.
That's Jerry Corsi. Doctors found a blood clot in Dick Cheney's left lower leg, and they've put the vice president on blood thinning medication to be taken for several months. Cheney visited his doctor's office at George Washington University Medical Facility following the mid-calf discomfort. He's 66 years old. He's previously been treated for a heart condition and has a pacemaker to regulate any irregular heartbeat. His annual physical in July showed that his overall heart condition was stable, okay, at the time. An electrocardiogram was also taken to check on some repaired aneurysms on the back of his knees that were repaired through surgery a couple years ago. Cheney has had four heart attacks, the first in 1978 when he was 37 years old, the fourth on November 22nd of 2000 after the election that made George W. Bush the president. Claude Allègre is one of France's leading and most celebrated scientists, and he was among the first to sound the alarm about the dangers of global warming, believing that humans caused it by burning fossil fuels. Well, guess what? He has now changed his mind. He believes that we really don't know the cause of climate change. He says it's unknown. The science is settled yet. And he wrote an environmental report about the snows of Kilimanjaro, citing that the Antarctica is gaining ice and Kilimanjaro's retreating snow caps and other global warming concerns come from natural causes. That's a major story. So he's changed his tune. A team of British scientists has set sail on a voyage to examine why a chunk of the Earth's crust is missing deep under the Atlantic Ocean, a phenomenon that challenges conventional ideas about how the Earth works. The 20-strong team aims to survey an area of some 3,000 to 4,000 meters deep. That's a long ways down, where the mantle, the deep interior of the Earth, normally covered by a crust kilometers thick, is exposed on the seafloor. The experts describe the hole along the mid-Atlantic ridge as an open wound on the ocean floor that has puzzled scientists for 5 years or so that its existence has been known, because it simply defies existing tectonic plate theories of evolution. What scientists want to know is whether the crust was ripped away by huge geological faults or whether it just never even developed in the first place. I've always wondered just what things would look like if we drained the entire planet of all the oceans just for 5 minutes, just to take a look at things. I bet we'd see old ships down there and all kinds of things. But this is a huge chip in the planet. I wonder how that would look from space. In Bedford, Indiana, sad story there, a pilot and his 8-year-old daughter were killed when their small plane crashed into their in-law's house near Southern Indiana Airport. As you know, there are no coincidences, so Indiana State Police believe that this was an intentional act. The crash killed a 47-year-old man and his 8-year-old daughter. The plane crashed into the residence of one of his in-laws. Pakistani police are hunting a man who dug up his father's 2-year-old corpse and took it home in a hijacked ambulance. Why? He tried to bring him back to life. Abdul Rahman's family says he is mentally ill and he's never been able to cope with his father's death. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website under Hot Stories, a new dinosaur species was a plant eater with a yard-long horns over his eyebrows, suggesting an evolutionary middle step between older dinosaurs and even larger horns and the smaller horned creatures that follow. The dinosaur's horns, thick as a human arm, are like those of the Triceratops, which came 10 million years later. But there's a great story on coasttocoastam.com. And you're talking about great stories. What about the Star Child Project that we've been following Lloyd Pye's escapades for years? He believes that it is not entirely human. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, his name is Lloyd Pye. Graduated with a BS in psychology. He joined the U.S. Army and became an agent for military intelligence. Lloyd is probably best known in alternative circles as the caretaker of the famous Star Child skull, the complete bone cranium that looks like a hybrid between a human and some other kind of alien being. He has put together some documents and some evidence. He's put it all in a special issue of the Star Child book. We'll tell you about that in a moment. Finally, you're getting down to the end of this, Lloyd, aren't you?
I sure am, George, and it's pretty exciting. It's been an 8-year grind, and we're now very clearly seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's pretty exciting. It looks good.
Well, tell me, what's new with the DNA?
Well, the DNA, as we've talked about before, has been cleared now with a new technology called from 454 Life Sciences that's going to allow us to definitively, definitely sequence the Star Child's DNA, both its mother and its father. You might recall, and I have on the website, on your website, for the first time anywhere, your audience is getting the opportunity to see these for the first time. These are the working gel sheets that came out of the testing process for the Star Child's mitochondrial DNA and its nuclear DNA back in 2003. And if anybody goes to your website or to our website, but to your website now, they will see that in the top two of the gel sheets, that's the mitochondrial DNA, and that's from the mother of both of these individuals who were found in the mine tunnel, the human, the adult.
And how many years ago was that?
That was 900 years ago. They died, and they were found in 1930 in a mine tunnel. So you have a human, and you have the Star Child found together in a mine tunnel. So we expected all along that both of their DNA would be fairly easy to recover because there wouldn't be any real degradation, any physical degradation in a mine tunnel. It's like being buried in a climate-controlled storage locker. So there should be and should have been great recovery of the DNA, and sure enough, if you look there in those first two gel sheets, you see that there was. The adult female on the left, her four bands are very bright and clear, and we see that her mother, because this comes down from the mother, her mother was from what is called haplogroup A, which just is a type of Mesoamerican, very common and sure. Nothing unusual about it.
She was all human.
the star child's mother, same way. But she was from haplogroup C, so that meant that the two of them. And for those of you that saw the Jesus Tomb program last night on TV on Discovery Channel, you saw the same sort of thing. We could say definitively they were not mother and child. They were from two different haplogroups. Same way with what they thought might be the Jesus DNA and the Mary Magdalene DNA. So same exact principle, same exact test that was done, but they got no recovery with nuclear DNA because it had been degraded, you know, been out in the open, and those things happen. But with the human and the star child, with the human, you see in the next rack of the next two gel sheets, you see that the human's nuclear DNA, which is that ladder-like effect of lights, of gel sheets glowing in the gel, that ladder-like effect proves that she was a human and that it was an easy recovery. Nice, bright, and clear, no problem, no degradation. So you would assume that since we know now for a fact that the star child's mitochondrial DNA means its mother was human, you would assume that if its father was human, you would have a nice, clear, clean recovery.
And you don't have that.
Not in six tries. You see those six numbers up there.
Right.
So in six tries, you're zero for far, which means the father's not really human. I mean, that's what it means. That's the logical conclusion that you can draw from that. Now, what science has to say is, well, you can't really say that. What you have to say is that there's some kind of bizarre degradation that we can't really understand, or, you know, but you can't prove it. You cannot prove that this is an alien, so therefore you can't say that. You just have to accept that it's probably some kind of weird degradation, Occam's razor at work. And so we were stuck for 3 years. But now, with 454 Life Sciences, we don't need the human primers that were used for the techniques that you see there. With 454 Life Sciences, we can take we know it's there. You can see very clearly from the gel sheets, the star child's nuclear DNA is there, but it isn't read by human-only primers because it isn't human-only.
We've got a picture of what the star child could look like if it were, of course, still alive. And
exactly.
Then you've also supplied a picture of basically part of the cover of Whitley Strieber's Communion
magazine. Earlier this year, Bud Hopkins wrote a piece for the MUFON Journal that was fascinating. That cover, the Communion cover, is just fused, burned into everybody's mind as the way alien grays are supposed to look. And yet, Bud reveals that they knew from the very beginning that that wasn't the case, that grays actually look much more like the way the star child is described and is reconstructed. In fact, the depiction by the cover of Communion has come to be used by researchers like Bud as kind of a litmus test. If they go into somebody that claims they were abducted, they say, well, did it look like this? And they show them that picture, and they say, yeah, it looked like that.
Yeah.
Then they know it's not true. And if they then say, no, it looked different, it had a bigger head, and it, you know, then if they begin to describe something that looks like the star child, then they know they're dealing probably with a legitimate abduction. So it's a very interesting and I think greatly coincidental thing in support of the star child looking very strongly like a gray alien type.
Okay, well, this is a fascinating story, Lloyd. It always has been. If you have a computer, I really invite you to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website and just take a look at what the star child could look like. Compare it to that alien that was in Whitley Strieber's Communion. It is an amazing discovery. Are you at a point now then, Lloyd, where you can say beyond a shadow of a doubt you believe the star child to be a hybrid?
I believe that's what's going to prove out, George. I don't see how there's been so many tests that we've done over the past 8 years, and just as they said in the Jesus Tomb story that they had last night, every test, every hurdle that they came to, they cleared it cleanly to move toward their conclusion that that's probably the tomb of the family of Jesus. Well, we've done something that is every bit as dramatic and radical as that. every test that we've come to, we've cleared it. The star child has cleared it, and we've moved on to the next test. And now, really, we're looking at only one test left to go, and everything that we've done up to now indicates that it's going to clear that test as cleanly and clearly as it did all the others.
When we come back, Lloyd will tell you how you can get a little bit more information on the star child and his new work. And also, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to talk with Lloyd Pye about the star child. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks again to everybody in Houston for just rolling out the red carpet. I had a wonderful time, and thank you, all of you at KTRH. Appreciate everything you did for us while we were there as well. Well, we're winding down the free double CD offer, so if you've been thinking about getting it now, just subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. And the double CD of Art's interviews with the late Catholic priest and exorcist, Father Malachi Martin, will be yours. But how do you get this? Call 1-888-727-5505, or you can simply go online at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back. We're going to take your phone calls this hour with Lloyd Pye, who's talking about his Star Child project. Now, Lloyd, you're condensing all this information into a collector's edition of the Star Child book. And when will it be available?
Well, it's available right now, starting with your show, George. We've worked it out that way, so we're going to have it available for 1 month until April 5th. The book is called The Star Child Skull, obviously, Genetic Enigma, or Human Alien Hybrid. And the collector's edition is very special. It's going to be presented as a normal book, published as a normal book, and its publication date, its formal publication date, will be July 7th, the 60th anniversary of Roswell. And I was talking to Zach Montgomery at the Roswell office that's going to be coordinating the events that are going to celebrate that 60th anniversary, and he said that you're going to be there.
If they work out the technical requirements.
Right. Well, they have the same problem with us. They have to have a lot of security, because what we're going to do is show the real, true, actual Star Child skull there. So there has to be a lot of security in order to make that happen. But assuming we can all work it out, we'll be there. But anyway, the book is about my 8 years with it, and so we are going to offer just this month, a special collector's edition that will be different from the one that will come out, slightly different than the one that will come out on the 7th. And this one that will be available in the next coming month is going to, however many orders we take for it, is how many we will print. We'll take the orders for the next month, we'll print them in April, we'll deliver them in May, 2 months before anyone else can get them.
How do they get them?
They go to belllampbooks.com, www.bellampbooks.com.
All right, so there'll be three L's there. It won't look funny, but that's
how
it'll
look funny. Well, there's an 800 number, too, in case there's any problem. 1-800-992-4821. That's 1-800-992-4821. And what we'll do is the book itself is going to be a 300-plus page hardback, top quality, 64 color slides in it. Again, hardback, and it's going to go for $30, $5 shipping for any number that you order to any single address. However, it's important to note, because you're an international show, if you're ordering from outside the U.S., your shipping cost is going to be $10, no matter how many copies you get, because we're going to send each one by global priority. Because of the 9/11 problems, it's so much easier to just slip a book in those global priority envelopes. So while it's a little more expensive, it's a lot less hassle for everybody to do it that way.
All right. When you talk about DNA gel sheets, what are these gel sheets?
Well, everybody has seen the CSI and all that. They're just called gel sheets because it's what they put the liquids in that hold and drift down, and they make those little ladder-looking things, and they're just called gel sheets. And when it's over, when you've done your run and things come up, that's what you photograph. So that's it.
All right, to the phones we go. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with Lloyd Pye. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yes, my name is Sharon. I'm from Northwest Arkansas.
Okay, Sharon.
I was wondering if you'd had a really good psychic ever hold the Star Child skull and see what they had to say about it.
Yes, I've had about 50 do that, actually, over the years. In fact, we had one time not too far from you in St. Louis with under the auspices of a guy named Joseph Palermo. They got together about 15 or 20 of the top psychics in the area, and we brought them to one place and brought them into a bedroom, and one by one, they gave their take on it, and doggone if every one of them wasn't different. So the problem there is, well, I might have heard the exact truth in any one of those 50 stories that I heard, but I heard about 50 different ones over the years. So it's really unfortunate that there's no consistency. I really wish there had been.
Okay, you let me hold that skull in Northwest Arkansas at the convention center in Eureka Springs.
Right.
Just after you'd found it.
Right. In 99, I let about probably 3,000 to 5,000 people hold it in various places that I went to. But since we cut the first piece out of the bone in 99, late 99, November 99, no one else has seen it. So if we do show it in Roswell, it will be the first time anyone has seen it since you and the others who saw it in 99 have seen it.
Oh, I feel privileged then.
Got close to it. Yeah.
What was it like holding the skull, Sharon?
Oh, I just felt overawed, actually. I felt it was, you know, real. And to actually hold something like that, it was overawing.
Yeah, I would think so. Hey, thanks. Appreciate it. 9 dead in a 6.3 earthquake, by the way, just a few hours ago in Indonesia. Mother Earth still making her noise. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello. My name is Michael.
Hi, Michael.
I'm listening on WGY.
In Albany. Go ahead.
Yes, yes. I have a great interest in what Dwight is saying, but I wondered if he had uncovered any living descendants through this DNA testing.
Any what?
Living descendants.
Living descendants. Have you found any connection? I don't think so, Lloyd, but have you?
No, because we did not recover the Star Child's DNA, nuclear DNA, and that we would have needed that to, you know, to establish something definitive regarding, you know, regarding descendants. But no, there's nothing like that.
Are you surprised with any of the data you're starting to get with all this?
Well, when I started out, I thought it was a deformity, frankly. I really did.
Yeah.
I just assumed it had to be a deformity.
Well, and you had to go in that direction to start.
Yeah, exactly. But as I said earlier, it just kept clearing hurdles. As I would take it to specialist after specialist, and I could get the ones that would talk to me. And I go over this in the book. In fact, the book is a journey. It's a recounting of my journey from believing it was probably 80%, 90%, going to be a deformity, slowly switching from to about 50-50 to about 60-40 and going completely the other way now, as I would find people who would tell me their opinions of it based on true science, I would realize, you know, these people really believe it too. You could just see, even if they wouldn't admit it or they'd tell me, now don't use my name, you cannot use my name, but I'll tell you, you know, like that. I began to be more and more impressed. I was not a UFO person when I started this. I was hominoid, so it was a convincing thing for me. So anybody out there who has real doubts about this, as they follow the journey through the book, my mental and emotional journey, they will understand how I didn't just wade into this believing from the right at the start that this is what it was. I had to be convinced, but I was convinced over time, and I think people who read the book will be convinced as well. It's a very compelling story. Again, just like I don't know how you felt about it, but I was very much impressed with the work that the researchers had done on the Jesus Tomb Show last night, because I have followed many of the exact same steps that they followed. And I do believe that this story, the Star Child story, is going to be in the next few months, maybe by the end of this year, treated in the same way to the same kind of documentary treatment that that show was, because it's just as big a story. Just people don't really realize it yet, but as the book begins to go out, first it's going to go out in this month just to our community. Understand, we're only making it available to people in the alternative knowledge community through venues like your show. We're not advertising it anywhere else.
Are you disappointed, Lloyd, that the Star Child Project hasn't been embraced by most scientists at this point?
Absolutely. But, you know, that's just the way it works. The status quo, the people who are there defend the status quo, and they want it to stay the same. They don't want big change to occur on their watch because of the upheaval that's involved. I mean, look at how those people were trying to scramble last night to think up ways to excuse around what those guys found in the, in, you know, with the Jesus tomb thing. Well, we do the same kind of thing, and we run up against the same kind of resistance. Nobody wants this to happen on their watch because it's going to mean such turmoil in their lives and in their careers.
Let's go to the next wild card line. Your turn on Coast to Coast with Lloyd Pye. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yes. Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
All right. My name's Kevin. I've called you before. And my question is, Star Child, do you think on their descendants, even though you don't have DNA evidence on that aspect, do you think that there is maybe possibly people out there in our world that could possibly have, like, knowledge of things that might happen, or they can feel what the earth might do, or just premonitions on certain different things that affect us all, and you know, like in our community or say the world in general? And I'm gonna leave you at that, and if you could please answer that, that would sure enlighten my mind, and maybe Phillips, some of us might feel better on that, because like yesterday, I all of a sudden at about 8:30 p.m., I had my ears started ringing. And every time that my ears started ringing real bad, and it like it was a pop. And all the day, and I was telling my friend, I said, man, all of a sudden, tomorrow, within the next 24 to 72 hours, we're going to have a major earthquake. All of a sudden, Indonesia, we have one.
They get a huge one, and at least 9 dead already. Okay, Lloyd, can you help him out at all? What's your
reaction? Well, obviously, I think we all have premonitions. I certainly have had them in my life, and I think all of us have. It's just, it's some of us are, I guess, maybe more gifted at it than I am. I get them, you know, infrequently, and maybe others do more so, and, you know, more power to those that do. I mean, it certainly doesn't relate in any way to the Star Child. I think he was starting to ask something about, you know, the descendants of them maybe having better skills, but, you know, as far as the other, and the other lady's question as well, to be descended from the Star Child, you'd have to have bones that were half as thick as they should be, would weigh half as much, and be 2 or 3 times as strong, and you'd have to look incredibly weird. So I don't think there are any descendants around. So any powers and abilities that people have over and above normal are not going, I don't think, to have come from the Star Child.
How did the Star Child die, in your best guess?
There's no way to know. It could have been an illness. It could have been an injury. It could have been murder. It could have been any number of things. All we know is that it got buried in a mine tunnel by a human female who then, after burying it and leaving its hand sticking out of the dirt, laid down beside it and took her own life. Whether she poisoned herself or cut her wrists or cut her throat or did whatever, she buried the Star Child after it had died, and then she laid down and she died with it. And whatever that means, it, we thought for a long time it was mother and child, as I told you, but until when we saw those gel sheets proving that it wasn't in 203, we knew for a fact that they were not biologically related. So she was either a caretaker, a lover, a friend, whatever, but that has to be the scenario.
Maybe the Star Child died and they killed her because she was the caretaker, or who knows?
Well, because they were alone and because of the situation with the hand wrapped around the upper arm, we believe that she did it on her own and acted on her own authority. And
no evidence, Lloyd, of some kind of earth calamity that might have done them in instantly?
No, because the mine tunnel was still very clear in 1930 for the girl, and, you know, 900 years later for the girl who found them to walk in and go in some distance and be able to see them. So it doesn't look that way now.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Your turn. Hi.
Hi, this is Greg in New Mexico.
Thanks, Greg. Go ahead.
Question here, something that's been pondering my mind for a while. We have scientists looking at different planets and saying, no, that can't have any life because no oxygen, no water. Well, we don't know that life may have oxygen and water in different planets. With the DNA, how do you know that it isn't going to look like human DNA on the father's side?
That's right. We don't know, but if it did look like human DNA on the father's side, if it was very much like human DNA in those gel sheets that we talked about earlier and that are on the site, you would see a reaction with the human-like the human primers that would go in and make that reaction are designed to recover human-like DNA, human-only DNA, not chimp DNA, not gorilla, not anything else, human. And so if it had been that way, there would be some sign of it, because there is no sign of it. Those few little blips that you see there are what are called primer dimer, which is just to let the geneticists know that the gel sheet is alive and working and isn't dead. So there's just none. So they're really, the father of the star child elicited no reaction whatsoever, so it's pretty clear that he was not really human.
Is there ever any cases like the star child any place on this planet, anything similar?
Not that I'm aware of, but I will say this. The conehead skulls in Peru very much need to be genetically analyzed, because I've said for years, I think that while the star child stands alone, it's unique to my knowledge. There are no other skulls like it anywhere in the world. There are hundreds, literally hundreds, of the coneheads down in Peru, and I think that they are every bit as not likely to be human as the star child is. But so far as I know, no one has ever done a DNA test on any of them.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Brew, or Phil, from Riverdale, Georgia, old friend of Lloyd's.
Sure.
Hey, Lloyd.
How you doing? How's your website going?
Oh, doing great. Promoting your book.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, the fellow that asked about how he died and all that, I was wondering, how would he have been seen, the star child himself, been seen by the locals? Would he have been treated more like a holy visitor? Maybe the woman that was with him was a priestess or something as a caretaker? Or would he have been feared?
Interesting question. Lloyd, a minute to go.
It's very interesting, and there's no answer. There's no way to know. If you go by the stories of the people who talk about the aliens coming down from the sky and creating, you know, hybrid beings in the past, they would tell the villagers, you better take care of these or else. So I would think there would have been a level of fear that we've got to get this right and not, you know, not anger the gods. That's about all I can say about that.
Lloyd, websites, want to give them out, please?
One more time, it's www.starchildproject.com, which everyone might know, but to get the book, www.bellapbooks.com, BellapBooks.com, and 800 number, 1-800-992-4821, and this is a good book to get because it's going to be a collector's edition. There will be only a finite number produced.
Can you sign these first copies?
I am going to sign them, George, and I'm going to hand number each one so that a collector. I've talked to book collectors, and I asked, how do you get the most value out of a book like this? And they said, don't inscribe it, just sign it and put a handwritten number on the page that you signed. And that means that if you get one of these books in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, it'll be worth way more than you paid for.
Lloyd, thanks so much for the update. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on, George.
It's Lloyd Pye. When we come back, Professor James McCanny with All Things Science in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.